Gathered here in this special place on this sacred ground with all its history and all its potential for the future. Being here is important to us. This time, this hour or two on a Sunday morning is especially important. We feel the deep connection to others in our community and to what is sacred. We acknowledge that there is mystery in our lives, that we do not have all the answers. We come together in the questions of life and support each other as we explore them. And in our community together, there is strength. As a community, we are a strong body. Together, we can do so many things for each other, for the greater community, and even for the world. At times, we face challenges, personal struggles, challenges within our community. But the love in this community is strong, and it'll always help us to meet those challenges. So again, this morning, we call on the Spirit to draw near, the inner light of conscience, the Spirit of life and love and justice that inspires us to right living, right action, right relationship, the God that dwells in us and among us and beyond us. We gather again in gratitude for life's gifts, all their gifts, and especially for the privilege of being part of this community. And we make this place sacred by our coming here with loving hearts and open minds and committed spirits. I'd like to share a reading with you from the late Unitarian Universalist minister A. Powell Davies. He was minister of All Souls Church in Washington, D.C. for many years. Let me tell you why I come to church. I come to church and would, whether I was a preacher or not, because I fall below my own standards and need to be constantly brought back to them. I'm afraid of becoming selfish, indulgent. And my church of the free spirit, brings me back to what I want to be. I could easily despair. Doubt and dismay could overwhelm me. My church renews my courage and my hope. It is not enough that I should think about the world and its problems at the level of a newspaper report or a magazine discussion. It could too soon become too low a level. I must have my conscience sharpened until it goads me to the most thorough and responsible thinking of which I am capable. I must feel again the love I owe to others. I must not only hear about it, but feel it. In church, I do. I'm brought toward my best, in every way, towards my best. You know, lots of people give up on church. They have simply decided that they don't need it in their life. Recent polls all show that there has been a dramatic decrease in this country in those who identify as part of any religion. In fact, when asked the question on the survey to identify religious affiliation, the largest growing group is nuns. That's not N-U-N-S, it's N-O-N-E-S. Now, some of those folks will tell you that it's because of their difficult experience with the religion in which they were raised. Others will recite for you a list of crimes and atrocities committed in the name of religions. Still others will proclaim that science has refuted all the sacred texts. They all conclude, why bother with it? They conclude they have no need for any church in their lives. Now, I don't disagree with their premise. Indeed, many of us have scars from being raised in religions that perhaps judged us as sinners. And it is certainly true that heinous crimes have been and are being committed in the name of religions. And I don't disagree that many biblical explanations of the world no longer commend themselves to the modern scientific mind. However, I do disagree with the conclusion that therefore we as individuals no longer need religion. I believe we need to practice a religion just as much as our forebears of biblical times did. It's not enough to be an ethical person. It's not enough to have a regular private spiritual practice. Without religion, there is something important missing in our lives. To help talk about why I think religion is something that we still need, I want to revisit with you one of my favorite stories. Recently, in a discussion about religion, a well-known scholar made the point that telling stories that people can identify with and draw meaning from is where religion finds its power. And he pointed out that stories need to be told over and over again to really take root in that place of meaning-making within each of us. I have to say, I was glad to hear him say that, because the story I'm going to share with you is one I've used more than once before. But as I thought about how to address this question of the different reasons why people need religion, I could think of no story that organized it better. Maybe you'll remember it from before if you've been coming for a few years. It's a story about two friends, Bernie and Sam, and Sam's rather perplexed son. Sam's son says to his elder Jewish father, "Dad, I don't understand you. You've told me you're an atheist. Why do you go to temple every week?" And the father calmly replied, "You know my good friend Bernie? Bernie goes to temple to be with God, to listen to God, to talk to God." But the son, Sam's son, persists. "Yes, but what's that got to do with you? Why do you go?" The father replied, "I go to be with Bernie." Now, at first blush, you'd probably say that Bernie is religious, but Sam is not. You would say that because Bernie believes in God and he prays. We often think of religion as the unquestioned acceptance of a set of beliefs in a deity or a divine power. Therefore, we conclude that if one does not accept those beliefs, he or she is not a religious person. I ask you to put that definition of religion out of your mind this morning. It may sound strange for me to say, but religion, at least as we understand it in the liberal theological tradition, is not really about being a believer or a non-believer. So then what's it about? Well, let's return to our friends Sam and Bernie. The different reasons that Sam and Bernie go to temple each represent an important aspect of why each of us needs religion. We could describe Bernie's reason for going to temple more broadly than just to talk with God. What I think Bernie has found in religion is a connection with what is of ultimate importance to him, a practice in which the everyday may give way to deeper understanding, a compass with which he can orient his life, a feeling of fullness, of completeness, that gives his life a moral and spiritual shape a glimpse of light that shines through the darkness of any moment and illuminates a path. To put it simply, Bernie finds religion important because it is a connection to a deeper place of truth, of love, of fullness, a place of moral and spiritual orientation. On the other hand, his friend Sam finds religion to be a place of important human connection. Sam could be with Bernie anywhere, the coffee shop, the park. But there's something different about being with others in a religious community. Because we come together as we do here each week in a covenantal relationship, trying to live by those words of covenant that we recite each week, the door is open to engage in deeper conversations and more profound human connection than a purely social club or gathering can offer. The reason that both Bernie and Sam have for going to temple, I believe, represent the two most important reasons why we need religion. One of the prominent Unitarian Universalist theologians of the 20th century, James Luther Adams, suggested that people are seeking two things from religion. He labels them intimacy, which I would say was Sam's reason for going to temple, and ultimacy, which I would say was Bernie's reason for going to temple. So let me develop further with you how I understand these two essential parts of practicing religion. We'll start with intimacy. When I use the term, I mean the deep human connections of what theologians have called the beloved community. This is an essential and defining element of our religion. You've heard me say before that the word religion itself comes from an ancient word, religio. And that word means to bind together. Religion is what binds people together. And certainly both our early Hebrew and early Christian forebears understood the paramount importance of community to the practice of religion. Psalm 133, how good, how lovely, how wonderful it is, those who come together in true fellowship. Now, you might think that someone like a hermit who lives in a cave or a little cabin in the mountain and prays all day is a very religious person. I'm suggesting to you that in our brand of religion, you simply cannot practice it alone. The Reverend Mark Morrison Reed put it this way: the religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all we must do. But together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed. In true religious community, the mutual support we provide to each other as we travel life's journey is critical. We're connected in our giving to and our receiving from each other in so many ways, in ways we don't probably even recognize. I mean, we easily recognize the giving-receiving relation with those who are ill or those who've lost a loved one. But there are many other more subtle intimacy needs that are being met in a gathered community like this one. It might just be the need to make some music together or just to relate to another person in an honest and open way, or the need to just share a bit of your story and to be accepted for whom you are. The second aspect of religion, our connection to what is ultimate, the part the devout Bernie represents in the little story, can cause some of us in the Free Church tradition difficulty. In the creedal traditions, it's very easy. You're simply told what you are to believe is ultimate. This idea rightly causes us to bristle. We raise up the virtue of the free mind here. Indeed, it is this opposition to the idea of forced acceptance of any theological beliefs that in some way defines us as a religion. But I say that with some trepidation, because that thought can lead us down a troubling path. It can encourage us simply to say, what it is that we don't believe and what we don't accept as ultimate and true. In fact, we Unitarian Universalists are very good at saying what we are not. But we cannot define our religion by saying what we are not. We have to say what we do believe in. Now, of course, you're individually free to reject any religious belief that does not fit with who you are. But doing that, which is fine, is the beginning, only the beginning of the journey. No individual can meet the religious yearnings for the connection to what is ultimate through a process that simply involves rejecting beliefs. In our tradition, in our church here, now, there are theists of many types, with many different ideas about God. And equally welcome and equally present among us are those who are atheists. Now, being an atheist, we need to draw a distinction, is not a religion. It is not a religious identity because it does not tell us anything about what the person does believe is of ultimate importance. Someone once said that calling atheism a religion is like calling baldness a hair color. On the other hand, identifying yourself as a humanist does tell me something about what you believe. And I believe that atheists and theists alike have the same yearning for a connection to a deeper place. In the same way that rejection of religious beliefs does not meet the yearning we all have, I also don't believe that simple acceptance of an unexamined faith in a God probably will not fulfill your real need for what is ultimate, particularly when times get tough. Both those who identify themselves as believers and those who identify themselves as non-believers have a choice. They can either live naively on the surface of life, or they can live from a deeper place of connection to what they understand as ultimate for them. In the Free Church tradition, you're invited to engage in a great journey to discover what, in fact, is ultimate for you. You're invited to claim a moral and spiritual shape for your life, one that resonates deep in your soul and that will be there to guide you as you think about both personal life issues and the issues of the world, to grow both a strong moral perspective and a deep spiritual grounding that will be there to support you even in difficult times. There is a place within us where life is fuller and deeper and more meaningful. It is a place of alignment where what we aspire to and how we live our lives comes together. When we connect to that ultimate place, the problems of our everyday life open up, answers come, and courage takes shape. The morally right decision becomes the only option. The love we owe one another is clear. When we connect with our ultimate truth, doing the right thing is not a chore, it's a joy. When we know this place, we can go to this place. And there we can find direction, hope, healing. Some of us will explain this place of fullness with reference to God or to a divine force of love or justice or peace. Some of us will explain this ultimate place in terms of the natural potential of the human being. For some, the guide on the path to this place will be a personal relationship to a supreme being or the voice of a godlike force within us. For others, it might be poetry or the stories and timeless messages of holy books reinterpreted in ways that make sense in our time. Still for others, it'll be through practices that emphasize letting go and being open to all things that bring them closer to what is ultimate for them. For some, the world of nature will be their scripture. For all of us, in the honestly lived experience of our lives, we can, if we are willing, find a religious teacher. We need to regularly revisit the moral teachings we claim as important, the foundational beliefs we claim as truth. We need to do so in community, a community that keeps us connected to the best part of ourselves. We need both the intimacy and the ultimacy of religion, not just to help us live our personal lives in fulfilling ways, but also to help us engage with the world from a higher perspective. A. Powell Davies makes that point so eloquently in the reading I shared with you earlier. It's not enough to think about the world and its problems at the level of a newspaper report, for that soon becomes too low a level. He reminds us that we regularly need our conscience sharpened so that it goads us to the most responsible thinking of which we are capable. We need to feel love in church and the connection to the best part of ourselves. As new members join us today at this service and at the previous service, and as there are others in the congregation who are considering joining us in the future, this is the message I want them to hear. It seems to me that today many people live very disconnected lives. They fail to see either the need for truly intimate community or the need to engage in deeply exploring what is true, what is the ground of their being. They choose superficial lives. And even when things are going well, they never seem quite satisfied. They vacillate on moral decisions or take the easy and the momentarily popular road. For many, the Tao is the Tao. The D-O-W is the T-A-T-O-A. Personal economic gain seems to be the guiding philosophy of an awful lot of people. Yet, as they follow that philosophy and accomplish great financial things, it doesn't seem to bring them the joy they thought it might. They never find that place of fuller or richer life. Why? Because they keep looking in all the wrong places. But then there's the person who lives a very different life. This person does not have all the answers, but is unwilling to engage the questions. She hears the call of conscience. He comes to church because he needs to be called time and again to his best self. In both gathered worship and in personal time of reflection, they strive to connect to the deep place of fullness, of truth, of love, that can serve as a compass on their life's journey. Their lives are not without challenges, but they meet those challenges standing on firmer ground, with courage and love and trust that things will work out. Their ongoing quest for those deep connections, both of intimacy and ultimacy, makes their lives worth living. They have found their religion. Finding your religion is a real and challenging journey for all people. D.H. Lawrence once put it this way: a person has no religion who is not slowly and painfully gathered one together, adding to it and shaping it as he goes. So this morning's sermon is an invitation to you to remember how important this journey is in your life, and to continue on it here in this wonderful community of supportive fellow travelers.